today marks the 10th episode of Security Nation. Let's raise a glass of wine, and that actually plays into the conversation I had today with the IT manager at Liberty Wines over in the UK. They are a distributor of fine wines throughout the region, and they actually bring these amazing wines from all these different regions to these restaurants, pubs, all these great things. But Tom's role as the IT manager of this company, managing a remote workforce, managing obviously a home base, developing apps, securing the apps, making sure everything's working, was a fascinating conversation and something that I think a lot of folks can relate to about how you work with the business to not only hit deadlines from the IT side of the house, but then, of course, building in the proper work on the security side of the house. We talked a lot about not only Tom's favorite wine, but also around how he manages that and how he manages the push-pull of IT and security himself, and how the use of internal and even external incidents in the news can really help with overall situational awareness for the employees themselves and how you can get better at that. So please, a toast to Tom, and thanks for joining us. Enjoy the conversation.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
All right, so Tom, the first question I have, I think it's the most important question. Why wine?
Why not?
That's the easiest answer, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, to be honest, before I started working in the wine industry, it wasn't sort of a big thing, a big part of my sort of drinking menu. But it's sort of, you get to know it, and obviously having more access to it, you sort of, yeah, just get into it, really. It's good. I mean,
Seems like, at least in the time frame that you've been at Liberty Wines too, I mean, the wine industry has grown remarkably. And I'm like you, like, it was never, it hasn't always been on my menu. But it seems like it's way bigger than it was, for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think it sort of goes along with the sort of the whole food thing, you know, food in general, sort of, you know, celebrity chefs and all that sort of stuff. I think it's all kind of gone along with that, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely in the UK, you had places like River Cafe, which sort of brought Italian cooking sort of to the masses. And then you had sort of obviously the Italian wines and that sort of stuff. Because before then, really, wine was France, Burgundy, Bordeaux. And then Italian wine was just this sort of strange Chianti stuff in a little basket. But obviously that's evolved over, as you say, last sort of 10, 15 years, I guess. It's a much bigger thing now. And people are trying wines from all over the world
That accessibility, that, you know, we have more access to food, we have more access to beverages, we have more access to each other. I mean, we're, you know, thousands of miles away and here we are recording this. And that kind of plays into, you know, looking at your career, looking at a lot of the folks who are out there dealing with IT and security. But one thing that I was really interested in about is, you know, you're one of those guys that has had to do everything, right? Designing and building a product pricing system, upgrading the network, all the way to incident response and network resiliency, and seemingly, you know, been doing that for a long period of time in your career. What, I guess, drove you towards wanting to be in the IT world specifically?
I think like a lot of people, I sort of just found my way into it, really. I mean, I did electronics at university, which I actually didn't finish. But anyway, that's another story. But a large part of that was obviously computing. And I actually found I was more interested in sort of, you know, the not necessarily the hardware itself and the chip architecture and all these sorts of things. I was actually more interested in the networking software and programming and all those sorts of things. So that's sort of, I decided that was the route I was going to take, and yeah, I sort of worked my way up to it, really.
Were you always kind of a tinkerer as a, you know, even as a small child, were you ripping stuff apart and putting it back together?
Definitely. Yeah. Always. radio controlled cars and all sorts. Yeah,
it's funny. There seems to be a trend with guests who, when we talk about, you know, why they went into these careers, it's, you know, cars is a big thing. Remote control car, Legos is an enormous, you know,
Lego was a big thing as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So every time I go after one of these interviews, I just buy a ton of this stuff for my kids so that, you know, I've tried to make sure that I position them well in this, this interconnected world. So, you know, the one thing we were just talking about, kind of the shifts in wine and all that, but the shift in IT and when, and maybe you can't place it, but when did it feel like the pull of security within that IT realm, you know, really either maybe took over, just like that, you just started feeling that more and more?
I think it was, well, I was sort of thrown into it when I joined Liberty Wines in particular. I mean, it's always something I'd, you know, I had worked closely in the sort of the security side in my previous roles. Obviously, I was building web apps and stuff. So it was always a sort of one of the core thoughts, you know, one of the core ideas that went into the design and how we built it. But when I joined Liberty, one of the issues was that, you know, they needed to tighten up on email security. They had a lot of spam and a lot of things coming through. So that was very much, you know, then it was very much a focus, very much became, you know, sort of in your face that actually, if you don't do these things properly, then this is what can happen. You know, so it's, I think it's sort of probably from the early 2002, 2003, it's sort of, we really started to notice, or I started to notice, you know, the sort of a lot more spam, et cetera, coming through. I remember, you know, I had a web server I'd set up in my previous company, and it was a Webstar web server. And I used to look at the logs there, and you would see all of the IIS worms, you know, hitting the logs. You could see them all, you know, looking for vulnerabilities in IIS all the way back then. You know, that was early 2000s. So, you know, I think it's always been there, but it's always, you know, it became really, really sort of apparent when I joined here, because, you know, as I say, you know, if you don't build these things in, sort of bake them in, if you like, then it's, you know, it can go wrong pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big challenges we all face, right? Is like we want to innovate, we want to create these new apps, and unfortunately, it's not always baked in from the beginning, as we know, or early enough in the software development lifecycle. But you mentioned, you know, best practices and, you know, pushing towards that. But how did you learn that stuff? Like, how did you, you know, all of a sudden you're having to do a lot more. How do you actually get down to figuring all of that stuff out? And what actually, what is a best practice?
It's a few different ways, really. I mean, in my previous company, we used to build a lot of stuff for blue chips, it was online job application portals and things like that. So they already had, you know, sort of quite stringent sort of rules on what their partners and contractors had to do to protect, obviously, the information of their candidates. So it's sort of, from then, I sort of had exposure to the sort of from the corporate side and the sort of the larger organization side. And then on top of that, obviously, it's just, you know, my interest in IT sort of takes me to all different, you know, blogs and websites and articles. And, you know, so you sort of just pick stuff up as you go along, really.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, I've always been a bit of a perfectionist as well. So I like to find out how to do things properly before I do them, if you see what I mean, as well. Yeah. So I think you kind of, by researching that, you just pick the stuff up.
Do you think that, you know, that that concept of needing to be kind of perfect or perfectionist, is that almost something you have to do the job that you guys do?
I think it helps, especially sort of with a longer term view. Because I guess you can throw a load of stuff together and it works for a bit, and then sort of leave the problem for someone else. But you know, I tend to hang around in jobs. I'm not the sort of person who likes to move around too much. So I kind of have to do things properly, otherwise it will come back on me anyway.
Right. It's going to be your problem, exactly, no matter what. Exactly. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And it brings up a bigger, conversation around the market and security pros. And, you know, we all hear about the shortage of talent out there. And maybe it's, I don't know, I'm just kind of, now I'm riffing, but maybe it's less about the shortage of talent and more about making sure people stay where they are in some cases. Now, how you do that is completely a challenge depending on the industry, but it does seem like it's a pretty fluid marketplace right now for people. And so the more people move around, I guess, the more danger we have of not having that level of perfectionism, because it's not going to be their problem.
Yeah, there probably is an aspect to that.
And do you, so speaking of that, when as your IT world becomes more and more about security, and obviously we cannot forget the other side of that, the all of the performance and optimization and everything you do in IT, just making the train, to use an earlier conversation before we hit record, to make the train run on time. But, is that making sure that that all works, is that more about the right people, the right tools? Is it about getting more budget? Is it something else that I'm not mentioning? Is the easy answer all of those? Or do you have kind of a philosophy of, this is how I'm going to make this work? I find tools first, people second, and I prove it and I get the budget. Like how do you work that in your mind?
I think it always has to start with the people. Because you have to have people that want to make things work, to then, as a basis, as a foundation. And then, of course, then it's the right tools, because with the best will in the world, if you get a piece of software or a piece of hardware that doesn't do what you need it to do, then it's, it's not gonna happen. So, but I think it definitely starts with the people and the attitude and the...
Yeah, so, all right, so, how do you find the right attitude? What is it about, what do you look for?
It's very difficult. if I had the answer to that, I'd probably be, I'd be in recruitment.
Well, there you go. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's difficult, and it's always a thing, isn't it? When you're sat in the interview and you're interviewing someone, it's trying to get inside their head and actually see how they view the world and, it's very difficult. Mm. Very difficult.
Yeah.
I think you can, obviously you can ask the right questions, etc., but until they actually, you put them in front of a problem and see how they behave and what their reaction is to that problem, you don't really know.
So you need some sort of penetration test for candidates.
Or very, very long probation periods.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing. Yep. I hear you. I think it's always been a challenge. And certainly in security, it's even more so to find that right attitude. And back to that perfectionism that you mentioned earlier. One of the things I find fascinating is I've been in this industry for 2 decades or so, but the constant, sometimes adversarial relationship between IT and security. It reminds me a lot of, just in my world, of the similar relationship we have between sales and marketing. Everyone knows you need each other, but you don't always get along. So as someone who kind of quote unquote owns it all, are you constantly fighting with yourself?
Yeah, I just have this dual personality issue.
Right, exactly.
It's not so much, it's still not fighting with yourself. It's, you're torn between two priorities. But then I think security really, its core is just sort of good practice, though. It's just doing things right, isn't it? I guess. To be honest, I don't really have too much sort of issue, because as you say, it's just me. So I build it into what I do, and yeah. I think, okay, well, we need to get this launched quickly, but you know, has it been tested, and you know, all these sorts of things. Have I written it properly, etc. So it's, yeah. I mean, I can see how in a sort of more corporate environment where you have the teams, two separate teams, and they, you know, you can have this the conflict, and that's where you need. It's very important to have people that can bridge the two areas or the mm. two sections, business units, whatever, and really just make sure that both teams are aware of the other team's challenges and requirements, and just to make sure that they're, you know, they can all work seamlessly together. You know, it's difficult. Mm. I can see it's difficult.
Yeah, but, I think you hit on something too of, you know, understanding the other side, whether that's IT, whether that's security, but from your perspective, the side that you have to always understand as well, but vice versa. And I kind of want to hear a little bit about that, of it's the business itself. So you mentioned, you know, if you're creating and deploying something, and yeah, we need it, you know, on XYZ date, and this is the deadline, etc. But building in the right and proper security measures, as well as obviously performance and all the other stuff that you have to consider, how do you communicate with the business to make sure that part is understood? Now, granted, you've been there a long time now, so I'm sure things have changed over time, but how did you get to that point where, you know, you're working with the business of, yeah, I get it, guys, but you know, also we have to do X, Y, and Z before to make sure that, you know, we're as secure and resilient as possible.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's helped. Obviously my boss is the same guy as when I started, my chief operating officer. So, and because when I came in, you know, that was one of the issues that was faced by organization, you know, clearing up the email, spam and all these sorts of things that, you know, we started off on that position from the position of, you know, the realization of what can go wrong if you don't put these things in place. And we've had, you know, obviously reminders in the intervening period of issues that have come up, where, you know, it just sort of reminds everybody that, you know, these things need to be taken into consideration. And of course, because they know me very well, they trust me as well. So they trust, you know, when I say X, Y, and Z needs to happen for this to be, you know, a stable and secure system. They trust me, and, you know, so that helps a lot. Yeah, definitely.
I think the certainly the ability to have a long tenure at a place helps. I think back to an earlier point. I also think, though, it sounds as if you're able to communicate it on their business level too. And I think that's something I think people, less and less, but it's still a challenge for IT and security to understand how to maybe communicate with the business owners in a language that they understand.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you have to make a business case for things. You have to explain, you know, what the cost would be, what the impact on the image of the business would be, you know, the tangible and intangible costs of not doing it right. And if you can communicate that, then generally you can get the support to do it.
Yep.
It's true. I mean, I hadn't. Yeah, it's sort of. Yeah, that is an important part of it, as well as the trust side. Yeah, being able to communicate in their language.
Exactly right, and I think security always was looked at as the department of no for a long time, and I think now it's the department of yes, but. And then you have to get into the butt of, you know, if we don't do this, here's what will happen to the business. And I think maybe one of the benefits of possibly going through incidents where attackers are kind of trying or infiltrating your systems is a proof point of the possible dangers if you don't do it well. Is that, like, am I being fair to say that we can use that almost to, and I don't mean it in this way, but to our advantage of, guys, like, look at what happened. It would have been so much worse, but this is why we need the time.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I mean, you know, if you avoid too much, you know, fear sort of tactics, because I think there's, you end up with a fatigue for that as well, or from that as well. But yeah, I think it's very true. And, you know, and also going through, you know, sort of risk analysis processes as well with the organization does help, because it brings out all of these, all of the impacts and what could happen if, you know, what if our file server was unavailable for, you know, 12 hours because of a ransomware attack or something like that, you know, and people think, oh, actually, hang on a minute. Yeah, that would be a complete nightmare because, you know, we deliver next day, or actually, you know, if orders come in before 5 a.m., we deliver the same day. So, you know, we, for example, we wouldn't be able to do that. So, you know, you'd be letting down huge swathes of customers, and, you know, the reputational impact of that just from someone, you know, clicking on a link or, you know, et cetera, and not having the right safeguards in place or in the right user training, et cetera.
So, and you hit on a few things there that across the quote unquote threat landscape. But what, you know, as we approach 2017, what are the things that kind of keep you up at night? Are there different types of threats out there that worry you, or is it just, I got to worry about it all, Kyle? Like, you know, it is what it is. But is there something in particular that you're like, yeah, this is what my focus is going to be on?
It was very much the user side, well, still is, but it was more so before I, you know, had systems in place to sort of help me with monitoring user activity. Just because we have a lot of remote users, we have a lot of users traveling around the world, and it's very difficult to, you know, have visibility of what's going on. Before potentially, you know, something pretty bad could happen. So I still think that, you know, that is sort of the biggest risk, the most likely route, I think, for issues would be users and user behavior and bad passwords and clicking on things and losing things and, you know, all those risks involved around users.
And, you know, obviously there's systems that can do that, tools that can do that. Mm-hmm. What about the just down and dirty security, like user awareness? What's kind of your, what would be your best practices for people of just teaching the good security hygiene to that remote worker who potentially has no concept of what any of this stuff is?
I think it's that, you know, as you touched on earlier about using previous, you know, incidents, et cetera, as an example, is, you know, most people have seen the recent breaches of Dropbox. And, you know, over here we had one of our large telcos was breached and lots of user data stolen. You know, people see these things in the news and, you know, you can use them as an example of what can happen. And, you know, it's not just about good user hygiene with their work accounts and work computer. It's about also about being the same at home with their own personal data. So, you know, you can use those sorts of examples and sort of make that relevant to them and how it applies to them and say, well, do you have Facebook? Do you have Twitter? You know, what if someone got into your Twitter account and sent out loads of unpleasant messages to all your contacts or, right, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. You know, it then dawns on people that it is real and it does apply to them. And there are some simple things that they can do to make, you know, to reduce the risks a lot.
Yeah, I think it goes back to kind of what we were talking about before of, we'll go for full circle here to wrap up. I don't often get the chance to put bookends on this, but it's this concept of, you know, wine wasn't on our menu 10, 15 years ago. Good food was hard to get. All of the, like, that culture has shifted. Yeah. I think when, and this is always my barometer, like when my mom is, you know, talking about a Michelin star restaurant that she really wants to go to, and 10 years ago thought Michelin only made tires, I think that, and hopefully she's not listening to this, But now security has become like it's all part of our lives at this point. We've all gotten a letter from our health provider, our insurance company, our bank, our telco saying, sorry, you know, your data has been breached. And so that in a way actually helps us, you, because people understand that it can affect them and how it is.
Yeah. And it's, and not just at work. It's not just work's problem, or it's actually affects them directly as well in their own personal lives.
Exactly. All right. Well, Tom, I appreciate the time. And one last question would be, what's your, you know, we'll go back to the wine. What's your kind of, what's your go-to now that it is on your menu? It has to be. you live the world. What's kind of your go-to?
Ooh, a wine called Tarazzi. It's from Italy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. I think I'm going to have to ask every guest from now on what their favorite cocktail is. That will be a running list that we'll put up on the website. Excellent. Well, thank you, sir. And it was fantastic talking with you.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.